You know what? Winning the title in Spain, it's so 2017, isn't it? This is 2018 when all the fuss is about finishing fourth and getting into those all-important Champions League qualifiers. That's where the real glory is to be had. Absolutely no doubt for 2018. Forget winning the title. Barcelona and their records, it's not so important, is it? Welcome to Marca's Eye on La Liga, where we will of course be talking about even more than the title race as it stands, with Real Madrid drifting back into fourth position and really not having anything good to say about it. Or maybe we'll think of something, as your host Mark Mayo joins you today. And joining me as always is Ewan McTeer on the other end of the line. How is it going, mate?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
How did you find the weekend's action then? Summarise it in a sentence for us. The Barcelona 4-2 win at Real Sociedad got all the headlines after, of course, the Real Madrid 1-0 defeat at home to Villarreal.
I can summarise it in one word. One word would be rainy. But in terms of the actual scorelines, it was quite unpredictable, really. I mean, did we expect Barcelona to win at Anoeta? Did we expect Real Madrid to lose at home to Villarreal? Did we expect Inform Eibar to lose to Atletico Madrid? Maybe not, but we'll get into all of that, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and it certainly was the wet Basque winds were flying through the air on Sunday night as Barcelona claimed that victory from 2 goals down at Real Sociedad, as you mentioned. And it kind of made me feel better about myself as someone who, you know, yourself in Spain and myself living in England, and we talk about on this Monday, it's sort of dark Monday or whatever it's meant to be called, like the worst day of the year for weather or something. Looking at a hot Mediterranean country and seeing how it's awful there as well does give me a little bit of hope and pride at this time of year, that's to say. And all of the pride at the moment is at the Camp Nou with Barcelona. That 10-year curse that people have been talking about, 2 goals down, coming back from 4-2 to win at a stadium they really don't like very much. And away from the game itself, because it's kind of simple to analyse in a sense, the Barcelona coming back, I want to talk about how Ernesto Valverde, at the start of the season, anyone looking at Marca English over the start of the season would have seen Valverde's comments and what he sort of said they were working on. And it showed this weekend massively, because he said they always worked on situations that were more difficult than regular game situations. He wanted them to work out how to get themselves out of these complicated moments. And that was certainly bearing fruit on Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it really was. And I mean, we've seen so many good Barcelona teams in the past. And it was almost a little bit boring to say, but one of the accusations that could be levelled at them time and time again was the lack of plan B. And, you know, it wasn't maybe strictly true. They maybe had a plan A.2 or something like that. But a lot of these Barcelona teams that, you know, the Pep Guardiola one, maybe the Tito Villanova one, whenever they found themselves going through a little bit of adversity, they just looked shocked, they just looked rattled and couldn't find a way to maybe come back from a couple goals down, maybe to win in some of the more tricky stadiums, maybe to break down a very tough defence. But in this first half of the season, in just 19 games, Ernesto Valverde has shown that he can win in a variety of manners. I mean, Barcelona have blown some teams away, home and away, and they've also won some really tricky games, you know, away at the Clásico. They've been able to go away to Atletico Madrid and to come back. He was able to change some things and get a draw in that game. And then they've also gone to the doomed Anoeta in the rain, as it always is. How many times have they gone in January where it's cold and kind of miserable? And they've come away with, no win, maybe a draw if they're lucky. And to be 2-0 down so early on, it seems, you know, it's going to happen all over again. And like you mentioned, this Barcelona team, they didn't seem rattled. He didn't seem rattled. You looked at him on the sideline, and he was just so calm and just did the right thing, made the tweaks that he saw, and he was just very analytical and not very, very emotional. There was a video from a few months ago when they took on Atletico Madrid and on the Día Después channel, and it showed you the two managers, Simeone and Valverde, and Simeone, they had rock music playing in the background, and he was going crazy, arms waving, signalling to the fans, kicking every ball, heading every ball, and then it went over to Valverde, and it was just, you know, calm. Some little background noise of some birds whistling, and he was just calm, just sort of kneeling on the ground, looking at things. And he's just such an analytical coach, and he never seems to get too frazzled by when situations go a little bit wrong.
Yeah, I did enjoy the reaction of Messi's goal, the free kick that looped up and over and completely did the goalkeeper. And hit the back of the net for the fourth goal. And I enjoyed Valverde's reaction to that. It was definitely a sort of, oh, you know, he's like that. Just a nice little chuckle to himself. And sometimes, I mean, it was that sort of moment. And Valverde is fitting the mood at Barcelona because, the style of play that Barcelona play isn't a very frantic style of play. And if you had a frantic manager on the touchline, I think that might upset the balance a little bit. And he is very much the calm, almost chess sort of player, coach. And I want to ask you about these sort of records that we're now talking about. Marco English had an article go up this weekend about the records that Barcelona are now in sight of. They're currently on 51 points. The record is 100 points, so they're on target for that. They've currently conceded 9 goals. The record is 18 conceded. However, they're not the best defensive team in La Liga at the moment, as I know that no doubt you'll point out in a second. They've currently got 16 wins. The record for that is 32. And they're currently unbeaten, which has never been done before. Are Barcelona actually capable of getting these sort of records tied down by the end of the season?
Well, I mean, like you say, they're on course for a lot of them. And, but the problem is, you know, they've had such a good first half of the season. Can they repeat that? 16 wins and 3 draws from their first 19 games. If they do that again, then yeah, a lot of these records will fall into place. But I think we're all agreed in saying just how special a first half of the season it is. Can they repeat it again when they're going to have some tricky Champions League games, when they're, maybe they're going to win the league with a couple of weeks to spare? Will they maybe tail off a little bit as they have done in the past when they've already won the league with a couple of weeks to spare? They've maybe drawn a couple of the last couple of games. So they're certainly on course with it. They have it in them, but maybe by the time May comes around, they're going to have other more important things to think about if they're still in the Champions League.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think Philippe Coutinho will be the key man in that, being cup tied, will be a bit of a blessing in disguise when it comes to Barcelona racking up those final few victories in La Liga. And there's also Jordi Alba involved in a bit of a middle finger controversy at Anoeta. I don't believe that a formal verdict on that has come out yet as to whether he's going to be punished for a gesture that he seemingly made towards the home fans. But he did say that if Madrid led Barcelona by 19 points, in Barcelona they would kill the team. They would be very unhappy with that. I want you to kind of flip your mind at the moment. And what do you think would be happening in Barcelona if they were 19 points behind? Do you think that the sort of defence-first approach, had it not worked, do you think that Barcelona would be sticking with that? Or do you imagine that the Valverde system that they've implemented would be enough to carry them through a dark time as well as the good times?
Yeah, I think there would be a lot of freaking out in Barcelona if they were 19 points behind Real Madrid, because as we've discussed it, Valverde's style, we've said it's very calm, it's very analytical, but it's also not quite as pass happy as some of the Barcelona teams in recent years, and there has been a little bit of criticism of the style. I don't think it's maybe as different from other Barcelona sides as some people claim it is, but if they were playing 4-4-2 and not winning, then I'm sure people would be happy. But when they're playing 4-4-2 and coming away with 3 points almost every week, then it's going to keep people happy for much longer. And Jordi Alba with his middle finger controversy, I mean, if he does end up getting a suspension, that could be quite a costly one, because Barcelona go to Real Betis next week, which, if we're looking at matches where they could potentially slip up, could lose their unbeaten run before the end of the season, then Real Betis is one of them. They struggled there last year with the ghost goal game. And Real Betis, you know, that's one of the teams that is probably the most unpredictable team in La Liga. So a big Sunday night game under the lights. You would really like to have Jordi Alba for that, especially considering how good his form is and how important he's been to making Lionel Messi tick.
The 8:45 kickoff in La Liga on Sunday, January 21st, Barcelona going to Real Betis. That really is a cannot miss game. So that's Barcelona. The race for second, I'm not going to call it the title race at the moment, because Atletico Madrid are 9 points behind. And, you know, there's only 2 points between Atletico and Valencia at the moment. It is a little bit of a race for second, and it is very interesting to watch as well, because both teams have their sort of unpredictabilities about them. Both teams have their pros and their cons. Atletico Madrid, you know, they've got the best defensive record in La Liga at the moment, only 8 goals conceded so far. They've got 3 home games in a row next up, and after a typical 1-0 win away at Eibar, it's all sort of falling into place for Atletico at the moment, isn't it? They're going under the radar, which is how they like it, but they're getting the wins.
Yeah, they are. I mean, Atletico Madrid is quite a funny one to analyse their first half of the season, because those two results against Carabag really put a bit of a stain on this first half of the season, because if they had been able to get a win in one of those games, make it through to the next round of the Champions League, we'd probably be talking about this being one of the best starts to the season ever in Atletico Madrid history. But being knocked out of the Champions League makes it look a little bit of an underachievement, even though they are doing so well in the league. I mean, 42 points after 19 games. I mean, that's fantastic for Atletico Madrid. And because when they were moving into their new Wanda Metropolitano home, they had to play a few away games to start the season off. Like you mentioned, they now have three in a row at home against Girona, Las Palmas, and then another one, get that in your diaries, is Valencia at home. And that's going to be, I think that's going to be a massive one. And I think that's going to be almost like a sort of boxing kind of right to challenge for the belt kind of fight. Whoever wins that game, I think, will have the right to challenge Barcelona and to be considered, title contenders. And if whoever loses that game, that's probably it for them. So that's going to be a very, very interesting one. And if Atletico Madrid can take 9 points from these next three games, and after that they go away to Malaga, which is another, you would think, winnable one, then all of a sudden, if Barcelona do slip up against Betis or another game down the road, then Barcelona are going to be looking over their shoulder. And as we mentioned, with Champions League football to come, whereas Atletico Madrid might be able to take the Europa League a little bit less seriously, it's all, they have the momentum and they have Diego Costa and Vitolo. And so we have to remember this 42 point total they've managed, that's largely been done without these two summer signings. So yeah, it's very, very exciting time to see what Atletico Madrid can do.
Yeah, I want to talk about Atletico's priorities in terms of whether they're going to go for the Copa, the Europa League or La Liga, but we will be previewing the Copa del Rey towards the end of the show, so I will hold that thought and move on to Valencia, who, I mean, as you say, they're going to Atletico in a few weeks' time. They've certainly bounced back from their sort of winter slump. I think the winter break came at the right time for them. It really allowed them to take stock and actually realise how well they'd done and take confidence from it rather than pressure. But these games come at the end of the month for Valencia. They've got Real Madrid and then Atletico Madrid back to back. And are we kind of on hold for Valencia at the moment? They're back to their usual form. We've now got to wait until they play the big boys, and then we can really understand whether they're going to be fighting for their place in the Champions League places or maybe fighting for second or first.
Yeah, I think almost like what you said about Atletico, maybe going for the Copa, Valencia might be doing the same. I mean, last weekend against Deportivo La Coruña, they had Simone Zaza, Luciano Vieto, Martin Montoya, all these players who you'd probably have expected to start. They were on the bench, and maybe they're keeping one eye on the Copa del Rey as well, or maybe they just didn't think that much of Deportivo. And, they come away, another win. I think you're dead right. This winter break came at the right time for them. They could, not least because Marcelino was in hospital for most of it, so he would have been unavailable. And I think he is one of these coaches who can coach his team well during the week and get them well drilled. But I think he's also one of these coaches who you need on the touchline. One of these coaches who can communicate his ideas to his team mid-game and make some tweaks, almost like Valverde. So I think it's important to have him back on the touchline. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't the prettiest win for Valencia in Galicia. I mean, two very, very lucky goals, a goalkeeping howler and a big deflection. But they're back on track, and yeah, just 2 points behind Atletico and just, in speech marks, 11 behind Barcelona. So still all going right for Valencia. And as we just mentioned, if they can win that game against Atletico Madrid in a few weeks, then they definitely do have the right to dream.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't rate much out of Deportivo La Coruña at the moment either. I probably would have played my B team there as well, and it did come out for Los Che. So, well, we're going to have a short break now because we're taking the unprecedented step of relegating Real Madrid to the second part of the show as we talk about the race for fourth place. Well, I mean, if you were going to have to script their season, then you probably would have thought it was a bit on the nose to have Villarreal going to Real Madrid, scoring an 87th minute winner with a delightful chip from 20 yards out. And yet that is the scenario that we've got at the moment. It just continues to surprise me in a way. Real Madrid, every week you think, no, this will be the time they get back to normal. No, surely this will be the one where Ronaldo's shots, eight of them per game, surely one of them's got to go in this time. But it just continually It just keeps happening. It keeps happening. Real Madrid, 3 games in a row now in La Liga without a win. Only 1 win in their last 5 in the competition. They're now only 1 point above Villarreal, who are 5th, and 3 points above 6th place Sevilla. Does it continue to surprise you? It must do in a way, mustn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you'd said the word third to Real Madrid fans at the start of the season, they might have been thinking third Champions League, but now they're thinking, ooh, could we maybe get third place? Because they're just so far behind everyone, and it's, it's at the point now where they've probably given up on La Liga, probably internally, even if they won't quite admit it. But they can't just ignore this competition, because Villarreal are now just 1 point behind, and as you mentioned, Sevilla close as well, and remains to be seen just what Sevilla are going to be all about under Montella. But Real Madrid are, nobody I don't think could have predicted this. I mean, the two-time Champions League winners to be struggling to qualify for next season's edition of the tournament is just it's just remarkable, isn't it?
I think that if we're going to look forward to what they can achieve this season, I think that the Copa del Rey would be a pretty even. Just if they were just to win the Copa del Rey, I don't think the Real Madrid fans would be happy with that. So now I think we're in a situation where the reality is they have 6 games between now and the Paris Saint-Germain first leg. That's a decent amount of games, but they have to use that to turn around their form, because if they get knocked out against Paris Saint-Germain, that is, I mean, we're talking about their season being over then, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. And it's a good point you mentioned. I mean, they need to change the plan, I think. And over the next few games, they have some fixtures where they can try and do that. They have a couple of Copa del Rey fixtures. They have, plenty of league fixtures as well, against some good teams as well. And they can try some new things. But the problem is Zidane doesn't really seem to be changing his plan. He's sticking with this sort of 4-3-1-2, if he's going the hole. And he's been playing that all season, and it hasn't really worked. And Zidane has been saying time and time again, I don't need new signings. The squad I have is fine. And once again, he went with the same 11 last Saturday. He only made 2 substitutions off the bench. It's a little bit contradictory, because if he did truly believe in his squad, if he did truly believe in his backup, surely he would have brought on someone else off the bench to try and change that game on Saturday. And to look at Saturday's game, it's an interesting one, because I think Real Madrid have had some very poor performances this season. I don't believe last Saturday's was one of them. I think that was just one of these games where Villarreal sucker punched them right at the end. Real Madrid deserved to win that game. They had so many chances. Villarreal hardly created anything until right at the end. So I think to lambast Real Madrid just for this game is a little bit wrong. But obviously, they're now so far behind Barcelona, and that's not just because of last Saturday, that's because of many poor performances over the course of the season.
I'm interested when you say about their starting lineup and how Zidane can move things around, because I look at that squad and I think that all of the best alternatives to bring into the team, maybe Dani Ceballos, maybe Lucas Vazquez, and go back to a 4-3-3 is probably what I'd do, but you've got Llorente maybe, or someone else to go in, or Asensio of course. All these players are midfielders, and it's the midfield three of Kroos, Modric and Casemiro that I think have the least amount of blame at the moment. They're not the problem, those three, but those are the ones you would have to take out if you're going to put in a Ceballos or a Llorente, because it's the striker position and, to a large extent, the defence as well, which he has rotated a lot forcibly. Those are the problems, and yet they don't actually have the sort of squad actually behind them to go and change that.
Yeah, it's such a conundrum, because I think it all comes down to Isco, because I think over the first half of the season, many people would argue that Isco is maybe Real Madrid's best player so far. Maybe there's a couple other candidates, but he's certainly up there. But the problem is, when he's in the team, it doesn't quite seem to fit. There seems to be a big gap between Kroos, Casemiro and Modric and the forwards, Bale and Ronaldo. And Isco is sort of expected to plug that gap completely on his own, and to be the bridge between attack and defence, and one player can't really do that. And we saw, I mean, maybe Real Madrid's best performance of the season was the first half against Sevilla, where they blew them away 5-0, and Isco was on the bench. He didn't play in that game. So it's just, and I wouldn't like to have Zidane's job, because it would, I don't know how I would solve this, but the problem seems to be Isco. When you play Isco in this 4-3-1-2, Real Madrid seem a little bit unbalanced, but you can't really keep Isco out of the side for so long, because he just... he does have this talent. I think they need to find another place to play Isco, even if maybe that doesn't make him quite so effective. Maybe it'll make the team overall a little bit more coherent.
Yeah, I'm going to put my neck out and say that I would make him a false nine and have Vasquez and Bale on the wings. And then you've got a lot of movement around. Maybe Senzio, Ronaldo off the bench. I think that's what I would do at the moment, just to stick my neck out. And it's good that I can say that, actually. I was going to say, it's good that I can say that, because Zidane is never going to do that, so he's never going to prove me wrong.
Yeah, I totally agree with you regarding Vasquez. I mean, after the cup game in midweek, our headline on Market in English was, doesn't Vasquez deserve to play something more than the minutos de basura, the rubbish, the trash minutes? And I think it's dead right. I mean, whenever he's played, he has played well, and I think he deserves a bit more of a chance. And maybe Real Madrid would have a bit more balance if they actually played a winger, their only natural winger in the squad.
It has. Before we move on to the rest of the race for fourth, I want to just say a quick thing about the transfer window for Real Madrid, because we've been reporting on Marco English for a while now that things are going to happen. We're currently halfway through the month, and I'm pretty sure nothing has happened. Do you think that something will actually happen? Do you believe that Real Madrid will make a signing before the end of the window?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because there really does seem to be a conflict between what Zinedine Zidane wants and what the hierarchy wants, because Zidane has been adamant that his squad is fine and he doesn't need to change it. Whereas there seems to be Real Madrid there probably wouldn't mind bringing someone in. So it's probably going to be a case of whoever wins that battle. And I mean, if you're Florentino Perez, do you really want to spend money on a January striker if you know Zidane probably won't play him? Probably not. So it's like going to the sales, seeing a really good bargain, but thinking, oh, I could never wear that in the street. And, you know, would you buy it? Of course you wouldn't. So, it's going to be interesting to follow. And, of course, you know, over the next 15 days, we'll be covering it on Mark in English on our daily transfer blog.
Absolutely. There will always be the rumours and whatnot. And I suspect it's going to be a deadline day thing, and that might not necessarily suit Real Madrid and Zidane going forward for the rest of the season.
Well, hopefully they've got that fax machine fixed.
Well, hopefully. They should be on, you know, there's, I don't know what they can afford now. They can afford better than a fax machine, no doubt. The race for fourth then, Villarreal are the big game team. They're the ones just following in behind. They've drawn at Atletico Madrid. They've won at Valencia. They've won at Real Madrid. They've given Barcelona a good match, even though they've lost. They've got 3 wins in 4. What's holding them back? Why aren't they already in the top 4?
I think their poor start to the season held them back. But turning it slightly, what might hold them back going forward is they've just lost arguably their best player in Cedric Bakambu. And, you know, they didn't seem to need him in this game. And they played, you know, on the counter-attack and only played with one up top with Carlos Bacca anyway. But, yeah, going forward, I mean, Bakambu was one of these players who maybe didn't always score in the big games, but he could get the goals against the mid-table and the sort of relegation fodder. And you just wonder going forward if Villarreal will be able to beat teams like an Espanyol, a Levante, an Alaves, and if they'll drop a lot of points there. So I think if we're talking about Villarreal going for Champions League, I think the loss of Bakambu could prove quite costly in the long run.
They've got Levante at home on Saturday in the evening kickoff. So a derby of sorts there to look forward to for Villarreal fans, and Levante's certainly not in good form, so they should be expecting to pick up the points there. If they don't, then we'll be answering our own question as to why they're not in the top 4. Looking at who else might be pushing forward then, we spoke about Sevilla briefly last week, and we're going to have to mention them again because they are just on a perennial slide. It just doesn't get any better for them. Losing on the weekend, Montella not enjoying the best starts. It was 1-0 away to 10-man Alaves, although that Ruben Duarte red card did come right at the end of the game. I mean, it's a difficult one for Sevilla, isn't it? They've lost 8 games this season. They've only scored 23 goals. That's less than Real Betis, Sociedad. It's only 2 more than Deportivo La Coruña. It seems like the top 4 is probably a subplot rather than the key thing for them to be thinking about at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, Real Madrid, of course, we're talking about how far behind they are, but they do, of course, have that game in hand. And Sevilla, even if they could catch up with Real Madrid, if they get level on points, they lost the first game 5-0. So to be able to win that head-to-head tiebreaker, they would have to have maybe one of the most extraordinary nights that Sanchez-Pizjuan has ever had to get the wrestle the advantage back in that head-to-head tiebreaker. So, yeah, I think you're right. Sevilla, of course, they'll be in the mix, and they'll probably stay in the mix right towards the end of the season. But I think this season, Champions League might be a bit of an ask for the Sevilla side. So, you know, get your bets on now for Sevilla to be lifting the Europa League trophy in May of 2019, because it looks like they might be qualifying for that tournament at the end of this season.
Who else do you look at then? I find it really interesting looking at La Liga at the moment, because the top 10 is filled out with some of the smallest teams in the division. You've got Eibar 7th, then Girona and Getafe following just behind. Celta Vigo and Athletic Club are followed closely by Leganes, who won again on the weekend. It just kind of doesn't make sense to me in a way. It must be comfortable for Real Madrid fans worrying about teams coming and jumping them for the top four, because realistically, we can't. I mean, can we be saying that Eibar, Girona or Getafe have any shot?
Well, they're certainly close enough that we can consider it. And if, I mean, take Eibar for one example, they're 7th place with 27 points. If they were Athletic Club, of course we'd be saying they might have a chance. But
yeah, definitely.
The fact they're a small club almost leads us into a sort of bias where we think, of course Eibar couldn't do it, of course Getafe couldn't do it, of course Girona couldn't do it. But they've done it in the first half of the season. There's no reason why they couldn't repeat it. With Eibar specifically, they've tended to, their form has tended to fall off a cliff in the second half of the season. So they, you know, that maybe will spook them a little bit. But we don't really know what Getafe and Girona are capable of. This is Girona's first ever season in the top flight, and this is Getafe's first season with Bordalas. So we don't know how sustainable these teams are. And maybe by the end of the transfer window, we'll have a better idea, because what happens with a lot of these sort of small teams that overachieve in the first half of the season is some of their best talent gets picked off in January. And I guess Eibar, Getafe and Girona will all be hoping that they can keep a hold of their best players up till February 1st and then maybe make a push for Europa League spots. So it's going to be interesting to watch. And it's nice to have some almost exotic names in there that we don't usually see fighting for Europa League or even Champions League places.
Yeah, I think in our opening show of the season, we had the likes of Betis and Sociedad swapped around with Eibar and Girona, but as it stands, it is the Minnows who are doing well, and yeah, long may it continue. I think it is a good thing by and large, and we'll have to be monitoring that in future podcasts. The final bit I'll have to say on this part of the show before we have a quick look at the Copa del Rey is Girona's 6-0 win over Las Palmas on the weekend. It's turning out that Paco Gémez, I mean, everyone loves Paco Gémez to a large extent, but then also, I'm not sure Las Palmas fans will be really enjoying that game too much.
Yeah, I mean, he was supposed to be the saviour, and they seem to have gotten even worse, if that was possible. I mean, it is early days, and maybe his ideas haven't quite taken hold yet, but yeah, that second half performance against Girona was quite shocking. There was so much space in that back line, and Girona just had a bit of a field day and equaled their, not just their biggest ever win in La Liga, but that was their joint biggest ever league win ever in any division. So whoever plays Las Palmas can maybe have a bit of a smile on their face over the next few weeks.
It's definitely the time to be going down to Gran Canaria, and not just for the weather, but they're not in the Copa del Rey, and that is where we'll be finishing the show with a quick look at the quarterfinal. So it's Wednesday, January 17th. It all kicks off then with Atletico Madrid versus Sevilla and Valencia versus Alaves. Before that evening, it's a Catalan derby, Espanyol versus Barcelona. And Thursday night, we then have Leganes versus Real Madrid. This, I understand, Ewan, has caused a little bit of a problem with the older fixture computer and the scheduling for the Copa del Rey this season.
Yeah, it's almost as if no one expected Leganes to be this far ahead, because of course Leganes play this Monday evening and Real Madrid were supposed to play next Saturday, and if you're going to give teams 3 days in between, then there was just no time to play it unless you play it sometime at 3 a.m. in the morning or something like that on Thursday. So this has been scheduled for Thursday, but that has led to Real Madrid's match against Deportivo for next Saturday being swapped with the Atletico Madrid Girona game, which was scheduled for this Sunday. So not the best outcome. It's almost I don't really understand how they couldn't have foreseen that Leganes might play Real Madrid or play any of the teams. I mean, even if Leganes had drawn One of the other teams scheduled to play next Saturday, then you'd have had a similar problem. So anyway, they found a solution, not the ideal one, but yeah, so Leganés will play Real Madrid on Thursday in the final one of our four quarter-final first legs.
They're going to give it everything they got, aren't they? Los Pepineros, this is their big glory chance of the season. They're relatively comfortable in La Liga. I don't think many people think they're going to go down. Even if they do give this two-legged game a good go with their first team players, it's sort of the dream tie in effect, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is the furthest they've ever been. They've never even been to the quarterfinals before. And looking at the lineup they put out in previous rounds, it really does seem like Cassie or Gary Tano is going for it. And why not? I mean, you have a chance to make history. Imagine Leganés in a Copa del Rey final. And that would be remembered for forever, really. Whereas, you know, maybe they would finish top half of the table. You'd remember that for a few seasons, but after a while, that would be way down the back of the history book. So, yeah, it's a great chance for Leganés to do something glorious. And as we've said, Real Madrid, in their really poor form, there's certainly a chance there. And Real Madrid, with their sort of backup teams in the Copa del Rey, they haven't been that convincing so far. I mean, against Fuenlabrada, it took two penalties to win the first leg, and then drew the second leg 2-2. And against Numancia, it took until a red card for them to really see that first leg win 3-0, and then they drew the second leg 2-2 as well. So, it'll be interesting to see how Zidane approaches this one, because Copa del Rey is one of the few chances of silverware they have left. And does he name a stronger team? It would be maybe a bit of a disservice to Leganés if he didn't.
I don't know. I think he probably would name that sort of B team that we've been seeing, purely because he needs those players to really make a statement and get some form going. If they get knocked out, then it'd be a nightmare scenario. The first leg away from home is very dangerous, but Leganés don't tend to score many goals. Even if they do lose that, it might be a 1-0, 2-1 sort of affair. I expect them to go with the B team for the duration of this tie, so long as it suits them. Moving on then to the Catalan derby. This is one of the interesting ones that pulls out the hat, but sadly I think this is a bit of a formality. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Espanyol have given Barcelona some good games at home over the years, but in a two-legged affair, I mean, how many times have we seen Barcelona put 4 or 5 past Espanyol at the Camp Nou? And I really think for Espanyol to win this over two legs is going to take something very special. And we saw it in the last round as well. Even though Barcelona couldn't win the first leg, they brought out the big guns for the second one and absolutely blew Celta Vigo away. So the fact they have the second leg at home this time means if they do slip up down the road up towards the airport, then they can really go for it at Camp Nou the following week. So yeah, I imagine Barcelona will be in the semi-final draw.
Who are your predictions for the other games then? Valencia versus Alaves. Alaves going to be able to reignite the Copa del Rey sort of fire that they had last year? And then Atletico Sevilla, I think this comes too soon for Montella. But then, I'll let you answer about Valencia Alaves first, because then I'll have the final point on Atletico from you.
This Valencia Alaves one, I think it's going to be trickier than it sounds. I mean, Alaves really improved on Abelardo in recent weeks, and as we know from last season, they do take the Copa del Rey very seriously. And I don't think it'll be easy for Valencia, but I think this Valencia team, if they really are going for the Copa del Rey, and as we mentioned earlier in the show, having rested a couple of players last weekend, I do imagine Valencia will make it through one way or another.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how a possible Real Madrid, Barcelona, Valencia and Atletico Madrid semi-final lineup goes, but that would obviously need the form book to go as we expect it. Atletico, I mentioned it earlier, how seriously are they going to take the Copa del Rey? Because everything they're in at the moment is kind of second tier, if you know what I mean. They're not quite in the title race, they're going for second. They're not in the Champions League, they're in the Europa League. The Copa del Rey is always a bit of a second tier competition in Spain. Do you think that this is first, as I say, I expect them to get through against Sevilla, because I'm not sure Sevilla are a great team at the moment, but how seriously do you think that Diego Simeone will be taking this competition?
I think he always takes it quite seriously, because I think every year every season it's unlikely that Atletico Madrid will win the league, if we're being honest. And to win the Copa del Rey, you maybe only need one or two good games against a Barcelona or a Real Madrid. So he always tends to take this competition seriously. They've done well in recent years, and even when they've lost, they've had their best teams out. I think they'll take it seriously again. They've got a home match against Girona in between this tie, and as much as Girona are playing well, that's one you would expect them to be able to win, even if the players are a little bit leggy. So I think they'll take it seriously. The only concern I have about this one is the sort of scheduling of it is the first leg is at home for Atletico Madrid, and it's at 7 o'clock Spanish time. And remember, this tie was only announced 5 days ago. It's at 7 o'clock when most people won't be finished work. If they are, to get all the way out to the new stadium is going to take some effort. And yeah, I don't expect the stadium to be at all full for this one, and could be a bit of a tame atmosphere. And then on the other hand, the second leg is played in Sevilla, and it is played at a sort of prime time slot, half past nine the following Tuesday. So if Sevilla are still in the tie, if they're maybe only one goal behind going into that second leg, they could certainly put together a boisterous night at the Sanchez-Pizjuan, lots of whistling of Vitolo, lots of chants against Atletico Madrid. I mean, remember, these are two clubs that really do not like each other. So, yeah, this is... I don't know, I'm a little bit concerned about the second leg. I think Atletico Madrid really do need to win this first leg if they're going to go through, because that second leg at the Sanchez-Pizjuan, the momentum could be what carries Sevilla through, even if, as you mentioned, the actual tactics of Montella haven't really taken hold yet.
Plenty to look forward to then, as the Copa del Rey gets really exciting and La Liga continues to tick along quite nicely as well. Maybe next week we'll be saying the same thing and really be focusing on Copa del Rey from the start of the show, as the pure interest of Spanish football at the moment. So that's it then for this week. Thank you very much for joining me again, Ewan.
Not a problem. Pleasure. Thank you.
And as always, keep that eye on La Liga on Marca in English, www.marca.com/EN for all of the Copa del Rey and La Liga fallout. And of course, there only remains for me to thank you for listening. And we will be back next week with another edition of the podcast, and we will see you then.